Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
After years of fine print contracts and getting ripped off by overpriced wireless providers, if we've learned anything, Paul, it's that there's always a catch. So when I heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan, I thought, what's the catch?
Yeah, but after talking to them, it all made sense, right? Because there isn't one!
You got me!
Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online. Correct me if I'm wrong, Matt.
You are right, my friend.
And they cut out the cost of retail stores and pass those sweet savings directly to you and to all their users.
I'm living in a cell phone dead zone, but not anymore thanks to Mint Mobile. You can say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages.
Because Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with a premium wireless plan starting at $15 a month.
All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network.
Uh-huh, and you can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number. Isn't that convenient? Along with all your existing contacts.
Ditch those overpriced wirelesses with Mint Mobile's limited time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month.
Yeah, so to get this new customer offer and your new 3 month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/rust. Hey, that's my last name, R-U-S-T.
That's mintmobile.com/rust. Hey, that's your last name, R-U-S-T.
So cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/rust. Hey, that's me.
New customers on first 3 month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. I just want to say as we close this ad out, there were no edits. We nailed this.
We nailed it.
It's like we were on a Mint Mobile phone call.
Beautiful.
I don't like blood and guts, but I love them when they're lengthily discussed. Cause nothing's more relaxing than the cries of death and lust. So spend a 10. Welcome
to With Gourley and Rust. I'm Matt Gourley.
And I'm Paul Rust. This is a podcast where Matt and I, we sit back, we chat about the thrills and chills, kills, blood spills, gut spills.
Any other? The pickles dills. people being sawn up in mills.
Cooked up with grills.
Yes. Especially on this one, little dining table side burner, little hot plate.
Yeah, you know that Lecter, if he tried to have that in a dorm room, good luck. No hot plates, baby.
That's right. We're here. We're talking about Hannibal from 2001.
That's right. We're on this journey right now. What would you call these? The Hannibal Haze. You gave it a name. Maybe.
I did, and I'm trying to remember what, like Hannibal Podocost or something.
That's beautiful.
It was really clunky. There, a good name for this season never fully presented itself because I think originally it was going to be Hannibal Holidays, and we moved it back a little. So
yeah,
that was on us.
Well, and also you know it's a. It was maybe hard to pin down how this was Hannibal because it's not until this third movie, Matt, of the five, so it takes three before they put their flag down and say, this is Hannibal Lecter territory we're in, people.
Right, and even this movie, you know, you could make an argument, is this Hannibal's movie? Is it Clarice's movie? Is it Giancarlo Giannini's movie? For, you know, a good third of it, it is.
You know, one third or one turd. they rhyme, so that means so, it's a good point.
That's on them.
Now, Matt, yeah. Before we let people know more about this podcast and all of our lovely trustees who are watching right now, live screaming with us, don't want to bury the lead. I hated this movie.
Yeah, I hated it with one little caveat, and that was just circumstantially yesterday was the perfect type of day for me to watch a movie like this. That's not saying this movie's good. This
a rainy day movie? Is that what it was?
Well, it wasn't rainy, but I just had a kind of day off. Mm-hmm. I wasn't feeling great, so I didn't go into some other work. Mm-hmm. And I was just cold medicined up enough on the couch.
Perfect.
Glenn was in daycare.
Perfect.
Nothing going on. And if a movie was good or asked too much of for me, I wouldn't have been able to handle it. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean. Yes, 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 yes.
So this movie caught a break with me, which is not to say I liked it. I'm ready to talk about it.
Well, you introduced the amazing critical rubric. I don't know if that's mm-hmm. the good day, good movie, bad movie, bad day, and how those could work out.
And
so
okay,
yesterday,
and okay, yeah,
and okay, yeah. Explain that again, just for
well,
our
just
new listeners.
You've got three double permutations and has that make it nine total. So you can have a good movie, good day, good movie, okay day, good movie, bad day. Okay movie, good day, okay movie, okay day, okay movie, bad day, bad. You know what I mean.
Anyway. That alone, if you went through all of them, that could be put to like a spa music kind of sensory sound. It'd be like on a loop, just be very comforting to hear you go through all those permutations.
Well, this movie's an interesting example because you know, I think at least in our probably assessment is probably a bad movie, right? Mm-hmm. But because yesterday was such a nice movie watching mm-hmm. experience, you could make an argument that I would go, okay day, no, good day, okay movie.
Yes.
I still think it's a good day, bad movie.
But yes.
It was teetering.
It blurs, yeah. And
it was the day doing that, not the movie.
Well, this is now bearing the biggest lead, which is this is a cozy podcast.
Right.
And so if people didn't know that already by you talking about having an afternoon day to yourself to watch a movie and it making the enhancing the experience of watching the movie, this is a cozy cast. Don't let it get twisted.
Yeah. And you know, there's almost a way to like this movie in that it's three parts. It's one part Ridley Scott film, one part just 90s thriller potboiler, mm-hmm. and one part Silence of the Lambs sequel. Turns out those three things are not ingredients that go well together. If I had any one of the three, yes, if I had any one of the three fully, it probably would never be as good as Silence of the Lambs, but it might be good. Who knows?
Right. It's not even a big enough swing in the Silence sequel territory to even know how to...
especially not with this script, which I think is also crazily enough an improvement on the book from what I understand.
Well, you know, I said I hated the movie and you're saying it's a bad movie. But that said, it is a cozy cast. And so I'm going to find the things that I can as much as possible that I love about the movie. And if I hate on stuff, that's fun sometimes.
Oh, I think this movie can take it. This isn't anybody's passion project. And it's like...
Does anybody like this more than Silence of the Lambs?
Oh, they're... I mean, if
I get
they
people
do,
liking Manhunter more than Silence of
yes.
the Lambs.
And as much as I love season two of True Detective, I don't love it more than season one.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Because if I did, then I'd just be a troll.
Yes, yes. Well, and I shouldn't even compare it... As much as possible, I think the movie could just be like criticized on what it's doing on its own. It doesn't even need to be compared constantly to what Silence of the Lambs was to show how it's bad. You know what I mean? It's just like, bad in its own way. But I'll choose my spots where I'm like, whoa, this is not the Clarice and Lecter that we fell in love with.
And just when you think you can let go of all that silent stuff and just watch a 90s.
Yes.
I keep saying 90s because
it is.
It's like really, spiritually, this is a 90s blockbuster thriller.
Julianne Moore, I think, or Jodie Foster, according to Brantley Palmer's notes, said no thank you on December 1999 is when. And so in the new year of 2000, it put Dino De Laurentiis or Universal who in a bind of like, oh, now we have to find an actor. But yeah, it's like a real turn of the
century. When you look at they look at the top 10 most wanted people, and it's not Osama bin Laden, it's Usama bin Laden pre 9/11. We all know that the 2000s started on 9/11 anyway.
Exactly what you're saying. It's like this movie's a real snapshot because it came out February 2001, so it's just 9 months before 9/11, and it does. Exactly. I mean, it might be, if one were to say these things, it's like the last, like, 90s movie.
Yeah, I think it is. It, like, got in under the wire, and every time it kind of presents itself as, like a 90s thriller, I start to enjoy it. Then when it tries to remind me that it's, you know, I'm Silence of the Lambs' younger brother, and I'm just as smart and charming. I'm, you know...
yeah.
Chad Lowe.
Yes, it is the Chad Lowe.
I don't mean anything against Chad Lowe. I really don't. I'm just saying I'm using a cultural sort of measurement. But
it's mainly
when it does
his
that,
first
that's
name
when
that fucks up Chad Lowe.
That's true.
It's nothing about the talent or the coming after or anything like that.
It's a shortcut joke, but I didn't mean it that... Oh, God.
No. I laughed because we were bending over to let... The Chad Lowe fans.
I love Chad Lowe.
No, me too. Me too. Everybody does. I think everybody actually prefers him now to Rob Lowe. So it says something. It really says something.
Yeah. But what I was saying is that every time it goes to be Silence of Lambs is when you go like, oh, come on. You can't measure up, especially with what you set out with your people and your tools and all that.
I know. Well, the trying to get at that, what Silence of the Lambs is, like the scariness Ridley Scott trying to do it. This isn't like the best comparison, but if you notice, like when like a dramatic actor, not all dramatic actors who host SNL, Saturday Night Live, but some, when they go on there, they think they're doing, it's comedy night.
Yeah, yeah.
So there is drama and there's comedy. And, like, I love Hugh Jackman, but he just strikes me as a person who's like, I'm doing comedy, and that's different than drama. And, mugging just kind of gets cranked up a little bit more. And then you're, like, looking over, and you're like, well, Charles Grodin is just funny inside and out. He's not even concerned whether he's making it clear. Like, I'm just saying it to pick a different example. My point is, this feels a little bit like Ridley Scott being like, I'm making a horror movie. I know that he did Alien, it's like a horror, but like, or I'm doing a sequel to Silence of the Lambs, and I gotta, so he thinks when the guts of that detective like spill onto the sidewalk, I don't know if that's the like drama actors comedy version of the fingernail in Silence of the Lambs in the hole.
Ironically,
like,
I think
that fingernail is so much more evocative and scary in its smallness than, oh no, my Italian guts are spilled all over the De Laurentiis diner outside the patio.
If that would have happened, that's.
If there was a Dino De Laurentiis cameo when the gut spilled, and he's like at a table eating spaghetti, the blood spills up on him, he's like, easy with the linguine.
And then he and a Cocker Spaniel do the Little Lady and the Tramp intestine slurp. Ironically, I think James Ridley Scott did to Silence of the Lambs what he tried to do, what James Cameron did to Aliens, where he tried to make a kind of popcorn elevated popcorn thriller that just didn't work.
Dude, I am on some Aliens Cameron shit over the last week. For whatever reason, that's just been the hole I've gone down. So when I watched this, I was like, oh my God, this is a Ridley Scott's first time taking somebody else's property and doing a sequel, which, yes, like what happened with Alien to Aliens, which I don't necessarily think he has mixed feelings, but it was like, I'm sure if he could change things, he probably would want to do Aliens, all the Alien movies, right? So whatever feelings, conscious or unconscious, he might have about doing a sequel to somebody else's thing in regards to his, that crossed my mind. So yeah, it does seem like exactly like it is like the Aliens version
it also
of
made me really sort of, this is not fair to judge Ridley Scott on this movie, but it did make me take a little bit of stock and ask myself, how big a Ridley Scott fan am I? I love Alien, love it. I like Blade Runner a lot. Is that it?
Oh, dude,
what else
I'm
am
with
I
you.
Missing?
I once.
And he's made tons of movies.
I was at eating lunch with somebody. It was like an acquaintance, a friendly acquaintance. So this wasn't like a, heated. But I remember saying, I was like, it's funny with Ridley Scott because I'm like, I love Alien and I love Blade Runner. Like, truly, like desert island movies. Like,
yeah.
I could watch either of those for the rest of my life and probably get enough nourishment out of those movies alone to be satisfied by them. But I was like, but then to have no movies after that that even come close to that those experiences, I was just noting, like, I don't think there's another filmmaker who has that much of a gap for me. That's all I was like, oh.
Maybe Coppola? He's got two or three.
He has more.
Well, he has more good ones and he has less films, so it's not fair because Ridley Scott is so. I haven't seen Gladiator since it came out, but I have a feeling it wouldn't hold up as well as I thought. And I remember even at the time kind of going, okay, I liked it. But
yeah. With Coppola, it's like Godfather, Godfather 2, Conversation. The Conversation,
Apocalypse Now. Yeah, that's right.
So those four.
Jack.
So five are unassailable. Yeah. And then with Ridley Scott, it's two. But then even with like Francis Ford Coppola, like if I watch One from the Heart or Peggy Sue Got Married or Bram Stoker's Dracula, like the lesser works, I still get my Coppola hit.
You're absolute outsiders.
I get my Coppola hit.
Yeah.
You're like, I see how this is still connected to that. The thing that was really baffling to me, I remember the first time I watched Hannibal, it was after digesting Alien and Blade Runner and getting a feel, and just being like, and I had seen Gladiator. Even Gladiator, I had this experience where I was like, who is Ridley Scott right now? Because I thought his whole thing from like Alien, Blade Runner, Legend is like the dude who does so much detail that you don't even ever see it on screen, maybe. It's like in Blade Runner, they'll like have a parking meter, but then it has a sticker over it, but then they put one more sticker over it. So you might not even see that first. His whole thing is like detail, right? And hey, that might take 3 to 4 years before the next one comes out, because that, and then to go like a movie, two movies per year that are so detailless.
Yeah.
Like they have no texture. Right. I don't know.
I haven't seen it since, but maybe I'd put Thelma Louise in the good column.
Maybe that was the last. I mean, I know people love Gladiator. Yeah. I remember sitting in the theater and being like, what is this shit?
I remember being a little underwhelmed
by fucking Digital Tiger.
And part two's coming out.
Yeah, into the toilet.
Ooh!
A number two where it belongs. Hey, that's two movies are poop jokes I've made now.
And they're both sequels. They're both number twos.
Hey, good.
Wow.
Good. Well, to your point about the Ridley Scott, like, I pose a question to you. Can you think of a greater drop in classiness between Silence of the Lambs, a Best Picture winner? That's kind of like what we're going to use as the thing that distinguishes it, and a sequel.
Well, yeah, Arthur 2 on the rocks. I've said that before. It's hideous.
And Arthur did it with no
but
five
it
Oscars.
It should have. It's a perfect movie. And
okay,
there was another one. This came up recently.
Outside of the Arthur principle, that we call it, which is like, that's the greatest drop between Arthur and Arthur 2. Can you think of another? Like,
what was the last season we did? What was it?
The Arthur series?
No, I wish. Three film.
Yuppies, the Yuppie Twos.
Okay, I got a case because I think this came up recently where there was another one where I mentioned it was like a huge disparity.
Mm. Did I say disparity or disparity earlier?
I don't know. I don't.
Because I know like Exorcist to Exorcist Two, but like Exorcist was a blockbuster, but it didn't necessarily like win Oscars.
Well, I get what you're saying. Like, Silence of the Lambs is up here. And if we're being, like, real, Arthur, you know, culturally, critically, isn't at the same level. But I think the drop between Arthur and Arthur 2 is way wider than even this.
Because
I still found this movie kind of watchable. It was too long. I was still, like, because... And it's probably Silence of the Lambs to credit, because I'm still... wanting so much of that world, and I still am dying to find out more. That even this, like, while I'll watch Phantom Menace occasionally and go, like, it still gives me just a little fix.
Yeah.
It's like the cheapest thinned out methadone.
I mean, totally. I was like methadone out by the end of this movie of just like, I want a scene where Clarice and Hannibal are in the same room. Mm. It finally happened. I checked the time. 106 minutes into the movie. And their exchange when they first see each other, not counting like the letters and the phone and stuff, is he's like, good to see you, Clarice. He says Clarice 500 fucking times in this movie.
Because I think
it's like the Jack and Rose of Titanic. Like, Clarice at the beginning of the sentence, at the end of the sentence, whatever they need to make it not a shit line.
And to remind you, you're watching Lecter and Clarice.
Yes. They finally show up, and when they meet up, he's like, good to see you, Clarice. And she goes, shut up.
Oof. I know. Julianne Moore, who I think is a brilliant, wonderful actress, I don't think she's good in this. And it's not, and I don't think it's just the script. Her accent doesn't ring true.
I love it. You say that it's not just the script. That's good. Because, I know what you mean. There could have just been choices. Maybe... Let's say this. Maybe those choices were made editorially and directorially. They weren't
maybe
acknowledged and put in the movie. Let's go with that. Because, it's...
I'm just not buying
I mean, the
her.
Big bungle of not having Jodie Foster in this, it's like... Whatever differences between Clarice and Silence of the Lambs and this... If it was Jodie Foster, it would like soften like the turbulence.
Oh, for
sure. Because you would go, Julianne Moore's playing Clarice too strident in this scene. Like, that's what I think. Clarice is too strident in the scene. Jodie Foster. But I'd be like, then I go, well, wait a minute. If it was Jodie Foster playing this part and she was being strident, then I'd go, oh, cool. Clarice is now, her character is changed in this way, and now she does have a chip on her shoulder. But you can't help when you see Julianne Moore do it, you're like, are you doing a different interpretation of my Clarice?
I know. We talked about this last episode that the thing that Jonathan Demme brings is undeniable humanity. And I actually think, as talented as Ridley Scott is in so many ways, he's not known for his humanity or sensitivity or nuance. And so a movie like this, a sequel, a Silence of the Lambs story, has to have that.
Hallelujah. Preach it to the rafters, Matt. Yeah. I agree with you. Ridley Scott is the man who Decker, in the first cut, the theatrical cut of Blade Runner, there's no suggestion that he's like a robot. Harrison Ford wasn't necessarily thinking that. The writers weren't thinking that. Ridley Scott is like, oh, I am a robot of my own. Like, push this, like, Deckard is a robot thing.
Yeah.
And then, when he gets the Alien movies back, who does he make the fucking star of all of those is, like, the robot dude who has, like, no affect. Wow. What a compelling character. So that, like, with this, that was my first note when I watched this. It was like, no kindness or humanity in this. Jonathan Demme, you might see gross shit in Silence of the Lambs or exploitative stuff, but you just know, like, oh, this guy loves... There's no equivalent to that thing I was saying in Silence of the Lambs when Clarice goes, oh, my dad held on for a long time before he died, and I lost my mom, and he's, like, closing his eyes because he's like, ooh.
They try.
I feel that pain.
They try to do that. He mentions her dad and stuff like that. But
it's always mean. It's always mean,
and it's token or something, and Ridley Scott turned this nuanced story into kind of a melodrama, even down to having an action opening. I don't know if that's in the book or not, but it's so melodramatic that there's a bad black drug dealer with HIV positive, so don't grab her hair because there's needles in there. But guess what? She's so ruthless, she's got a baby shield. And what do I do? And then Julie, she's dressed in like almost like action military fatigues.
Oh, no, I know when I saw that. I was watching it with my wife. And that whole sequence with the what you were just describing, the siege or what... I said to my wife, I was like, I love my grandma, but this seems like it was written by my like Fox News watching grandma. Like,
yeah.
It is such an overcooked idea about what inner city crime or drug bust would entail. That like it seemed as if like an alien or a robot wrote
And then to buy that she's the one that's hung out to dry on this when everyone knows that was in the operation that this local cop blew the whole operation. So why wouldn't the chain of command know that? Everybody would have come to bat for Clarice. It's such a weird contrivance. That's why I wonder if it's in the novel. But then again, it probably is because everything I've read about the novel is how insane, and I actually remember at the time all this build up for the sequel and everybody waiting for Thomas Harris' novel and him. It felt like George R. R. Martin, where he was like reluctant. He didn't want to like close the wavelength on Schrodinger's cat of what Hannibal could be, but then he was forced to, you know, reportedly by Dino De Laurentiis. And then people listening,
he got paid $10 million when he so that's a big motivator.
But people should know that the book ends with Hannibal and Clarice becoming lovers and eating the full brain together as a meal and absconding off to be with each other for the rest of their lives, which I think wisely everybody was like, we can't do that. Ridley Scott's ending is better than that, I will say. Yeah. But apparently there were three endings. There was a De Laurentiis ending, I think the Ridley ending, and was it maybe the screenwriter? I can't remember. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just, boggles the mind. They're starting
negative. Let's talk about that. Thomas Harris novel ending. I mean, I'm sure when people read that, when that book was first published, we were like,
maybe there's the biggest drop off in sequel.
That between those two books. It's like luridness. I don't know Thomas.
I haven't read it. So
Harris says, I don't know him as a man. But that just seems like a... I'd be curious because, hey, dude, we're always artists first. So if this dude, artists first. So if this was like his vision of this character and this story, and it is bonkers, then I'm like, hey, right on, man. This is so cool that you followed your like weird.
Yeah, you Gremlins 2'd it.
But
I don't think that's the case.
And if Dino De Laurentiis and the Jonathan Demme's and the Jodie Foster's of the world, if they're just too square to figure it out, that's cool too. But like, I also don't know if it's like an act of like self-sabotage or franchise sabotage. Something. Of just like...
Well, because he also, when Ridley went to him or the screenwriter went to him, was like, I think we want to change the ending. And he's like, that's cool.
Yeah.
Meaning, I'm not sure I nailed it anyway. That's what it feels like. I have no idea.
But. Yeah, I'm trying to understand if for him, and I'm not saying it was a conscious like self-sabotage. It was just sort of like, how could I put a weird nail in this thing if I'm not like loving
these books? It kind of seems like he had to be coerced to do it, which is never the like right conditions to create something. And and then Mamet wrote the first screenplay, which was then completely thrown out, my understanding, if at all used maybe a little bit.
Yeah, that right. It was no, it was like a laughably bad, I think.
Is that right?
Yeah. Oh, but wow. I think that would be everybody's like, every screenwriter who adapts something's nightmare. That is like, you turn in the draft and everybody was like, and the story went, that was shit.
Yeah.
Because then they brought in Steve Zalian. Yeah. I never know how to pronounce his last name.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah. Zach, I always think it's Zach Galligan from,
it is
from Gremlins. Yeah. And Gremlins too. Wait, why was I talking about Zach Galligan?
Cause they brought him in to do the next draft. He declined.
Right. And he said, you can't.
Cause of the script.
It's hard enough to say no to Dino De Laurentiis once, but it's very tough to say no to him twice, was the quote, paraphrased. So he did it, and he was originally offered Silence of the Lambs to adapt, and he passed on it, and then the screenwriter Ted Talley, declined to adapt the sequel. So you got, let's say this is the Rolling Stones. They're reuniting, and the original band was Jonathan Demme on keyboard,
okay,
Jody Foster on the drums, and Anthony Hopkins
on stand-up bass.
On stand-up bass.
Who's on accordion?
Frankie Faison.
Okay. And Dino De Laurentiis.
Well, no, because he's not in the part of the Silence of the Lambs band that we love, that we're excited for the comeback show.
He's the Brian Epstein.
Yes.
Okay.
No, the thing, he's not, we don't want him even in the picture.
I don't know where you're going with this
touchy
metaphor.
Touchy with Silence of the Lambs.
I'm premature.
But if they reunited, and it, like, let's say they're the Rolling Stones, it'd kind of be like Mick Jagger. That's it.
Yeah.
Like, Anthony Hopkins is the Mick Jagger.
Yeah.
And who else from the original band came back?
You're right.
Outside of Thomas Harris.
I know.
That's a pretty huge group of creative people to lose during a sequel.
Yeah, and it sounds like Anthony Hopkins was the first on board and was pretty bummed when Jodie Foster and Demme decided not to do it. I could understand. And he suggested Julianne Moore.
I heard he dried his tears, though, with $10 million. Ah, this is good. Ooh, these bills come in handy.
I'm watching Arthur 2 on the rocks all the way to the bank. But the list of people considered for this movie per Brantley's notes is incredible. Some insane, some good. But Kate Blanchett, I think, would have been better. She was not available. Who else? Do you remember the list? There was, you know, anywhere from like Sarah Michelle Gellar to Jennifer Aniston to everybody you expect.
Gwyneth Paltrow. Angelina Jolie was one of the names too.
Yeah, but really, Cate Blanchett is about the only one in there that feels right.
Yeah,
to
you know who wasn't on that list, but it just flashed around my mind in terms of a diminutive semi-child actors we saw become adults. Winona Ryder could have been. No, you just can't see it. Yeah.
There's something
she's too waifish for the FBI.
Yeah, she's a little too, I don't know.
Premier cover magazine.
You know, it's interesting that this has not come up again because there's been so many rebirths of IP that you got to hand it to, well, I know Demi's dead, but there was a time probably 5 years ago. When did Demi die? Like 2 years ago?
Yeah.
That I wouldn't have been surprised if they put together a Let's Wipe Away Hannibal sequel to Silence of the Lambs, a current day Jodie Foster, Anthony Hopkins,
dude,
Jonathan Demme. But it wouldn't have been right. It wouldn't have been good. Yeah. It's best that it didn't happen. And
yes,
Jodie Foster and Jonathan Demme, I think, deserve a lot of credit
Yeah,
she said herself, I was going to make more money than I've ever made in my career combined to do this sequel, but it felt like a betrayal of Clarice. And that's incredible.
She rules.
I know, Jodie
Foster
really
is like, yeah, pretty unassailable,
especially
cool person.
When you know that she had to lobby to get the role in the first place, that nobody wanted her.
Wow.
It's amazing.
And then to be like, yeah, I'm connected to this character enough that I have to wear a pretty dress while I watch Hannibal eat Ray Liotta's brain or feed his brain to him. You're like, no, that's it. It is classy, and it's classy of Jonathan Demme. I mean, excuse me. I'm sure it's also because they were having big fish to fry. None of them were in this like Full House reboot time where John Stamos is very happy that the reboot's coming. Like those guys, you know.
But what if they went full Creedence Clearwater and then did their own without Anthony Hopkins?
Would then they bring Brian Cox in?
Oh, wow. Interesting. Oh my god.
I mean, to go, I'm sure somebody's crunched the numbers, but if you go from screen time of Lecter and Manhunter to Silence of the Lambs, and Silence of the Lambs was already notable because it was like one of the fewest minutes of screen time a best actor winner of an Oscar that was considered best actor won. But then, yeah, the screen time in Hannibal, I'm sure, is pretty substantial.
I wonder if they ever considered, once Demme and Foster dropped out, going, let's get Michael Mann back. Let's do Brian Cox. Let's do that Hannibal.
That rule, I mean, Hopkins, if he was on board, it seemed like this movie could have been made by, like, the Farrelly brothers. And, like, it still would have, like...
I know.
Been, like... And Anthony Hopkins going... So we're saying Jonathan Demme, Jodie Foster, that's so cool that they turned down the big paycheck to do this. That's not to say Anthony Hopkins is uncool for doing this, but if we look at it from his point of view, if he loves playing this character, if this character means he gets to shoot in Rome or as an actor, get paid lots of money, and then get to be the hero, essentially, at the end. You can see it from his point of view. I'm like, this might be trash. I don't care. This is.
He said that he's regretted doing this in Red Dragon.
He did say that, really?
More recently.
Whoa.
But, yeah, at the time, it did feel like... Well, if he said no, they would have had to pull the plug on the whole movie, right?
Yeah, I think it was like one of them had to be an essential, like it either had to be Jodie Foster came back or Anthony Hopkins. Like it was going to have to.
I don't think you could do just Demme. I think you have to have one of the two.
You're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
Because, you know, everyday people don't really care about that.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, they would miss it. They wouldn't know it.
Yeah. The Jonathan, having Anthony Hopkins come back, I guess making the movie. Is it probably wouldn't exist. That's interesting that he said that about because there is something that really it shouldn't matter if sequels are made to stuff because it shouldn't necessarily affect the original. The original is always going to be there. But like E.T. and Shampoo are my two favorite movies, and I am so happy that there's never
been... I didn't know that about Shampoo.
Oh, baby, I love it.
I didn't know those are your two favorite movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, they always battle each other
really?
For the number one spot.
I've never seen Shampoo.
Maybe you got to watch it.
All right, baby. Yeah, if you would have gotten E.T. 2 Nocturnal Fears, is that what it's called?
Yeah, Nocturnal Emissions.
Anyway, this is with Gorley and Russ, the podcast where...
Yeah, visit
our
Patreon.
Go to Patreon. No, we'll make it quick. Go to Patreon. You can watch the live screaming if you're a baby xenomorph level. You can get shout outs. We'll do those next episode because we've gotten through a lot of them. And you can get film commentaries, mailbag episodes, all sorts of fun. All right. Well, let's get into some of the finer points. We haven't even mentioned Gary Oldman yet.
That's true.
The makeup's fantastic.
Oh, my good golly, Miss Molly, is it not?
So much so that he installed a spotlight for his face in his bed. When he turns on the light for Clarice,
so gross.
It's one thing in close-up when you notice it go on, you just think the room's going on, but then they go to a wider shot and he's got a spotlight on his face. What could that be other than to just freak people out.
Again, my wife, Leslie, when we were watching it, she was like, I don't mind the character, but why so many close-ups?
Oh, like, that's Ridley Scott, though, like you're saying with the guts. It's just him going, I'm just going to put it in your face. It's
also, I think Thomas Harris and Ridley Scott at that point in their lives must have met a couple Les Moonveses of their time, of like the uber rich pervert gross guy who like is really the only last villain in their life.
Right.
Yeah. Like they're on the top of their heap. So who do they have to hate now but the Vanderbilts? You know what I mean?
I mean, because doesn't Ridley Scott go on to do all the money in the world?
Yeah. He has some sort of, I mean, that's cool, but it's just like, it almost like that scene when he's out on the patio and he's got shades on. He's like, give me a fucking head. I was like, what? What did Les Moonves do to Ridley Scott and Thomas Harris?
I love that you make him Les Moonves.
I'm trying to think of, I mean, I do like the, okay, in the category of stuff I do like and love about the movie, the number one thing would be the Gary Oldman character.
Me too.
Yeah.
It's just so macabre and very believable.
Yes.
Because Gary Oldman also, I think maybe it's a limitation of the makeup. He's not doing an overacting thing, which at this time he was like in the prime of his overacting.
Right. Life. This is post-professional, the professional. And
yeah. But apparently he's doing a bit of an impersonation of Thomas Harris, he said, because he met with him.
Holy shit. Yeah. Wow. That's funny. Speaking of the professional, wasn't that it? Italian detectives bopping around. I was like, you can't give me a Jean Reno here?
Oh,
give me some fucking
kidding?
Movie star.
Giovanni Giannini? 5 years he's going to go on to make the greatest movie that ever existed, Casino Royale.
He's in Casino Royale?
Yes, he's Mathis. And Quantum of Solace.
What?
I actually love him. And he's a pretty well-known international European actor, but
okay.
I understand what you're saying.
Too much time though with a guy who ain't a marquee star.
Why is that whole first third of him? And apparently there was more about the serial killer that he was tracking, who apparently also, I think I read this in IMDb trivia, is like seen in the movie as the janitor a couple times, and they cut all this stuff about him and like getting that guy.
You know, hearing this, it's like, not that Jurassic Park 2, The Lost World, is a good movie, but you know that, like, the novel...
That's a pretty big drop-off.
Oh, whoo! Yeah. Good point. The novel came out, and they were already working on the idea for the... David Koepp and Spielberg were working on an idea for Cooking Up Ideas. And so... when the Crichton book came out and there were parts of it they didn't like, they were just like, we'll make our own Jurassic Park 2. Like, what's the difference here? I wish they'd done that.
Yeah.
Maybe because they spent $10 million on the novel and Thomas Harris now has to be like more fetid. Yeah. I don't know if that's the right word. But like, so now they have to focus on, they can't change it. But it should have just been a straight up like, why do we have to adapt this weird book? Like, let's just take the idea that this book suggests the idea that Hannibal reaches out to Clarice again while he's at large. Like, that's enough of
because there is an element of the Italian setting and the globetrotting and that he's established himself there under an alias as someone of like academic renown. I like all that.
Me too,
but like you're saying, though, the fact that Pazzi, Federico Pazzi, becomes the main character for a third of the movie.
And then their scenes between each other have none of the, you know, in Silence of the Lambs, when Hannibal Lecter speaks, practically, no hyperbole, every sentence is kind of like a quotable line. They're so like powerful and they're... how he articulates stuff. And so when his first dialogue scene is between Potsy or Fonzie.
Or Cannibal, the Ralph Mouth.
Yeah, the Ralph Mouth character comes in. And their first scene between each other is just exposition of like, I've been the professor here for this whole, like, and just catching up on dates and names. I'm like, what the I like the lector who's like, if that guy would have came in and he's like, what's the best ham sandwich you've ever eaten, detective? And he's just like, oh, okay, weirdo. Like,
with Crawley and Rust.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
After years of fine print contracts and getting ripped off by overpriced wireless providers, if we've learned anything, Paul, is that there's always a catch. So when I heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan, I thought, what's the catch?
Yeah, but after talking to them, it all made sense, right? Because there isn't one!
You got me!
Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online. Correct me if I'm wrong, Matt.
You are right, my friend.
And they cut out the cost of retail stores and pass those sweet savings directly to you and to all their users.
I'm living in a cell phone dead zone, but not anymore thanks to Mint Mobile. You can say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages.
Because Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with a premium wireless plan starting at $15 a month.
All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network.
Uh-huh, and you can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number. Isn't that convenient? Along with all your existing contacts.
Ditch those overpriced wirelesses with Mint Mobile's limited time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month.
Yeah, so to get this new customer offer and your new 3 month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/rust. Hey, that's my last name, R-U-S-T.
That's mintmobile.com/rust. Hey, that's your last name, R-U-S-T.
So cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/rust. Hey, that's me.
New customers on first 3 month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. I just want to say as we close this ad out, there were no edits. We nailed this.
We nailed it.
It's like we were on a Mint Mobile phone call.
Beautiful.
With Crawley and Rust.
They also make Hannibal into a superhero in this where he's just kind of like, he's like a Jason Bourne or a Reacher where he can just get out of every situation. I know he does that in the first one, but it's kind of like, He pulled that off. He did it.
And it surprised us when we saw it in Silence Lab. Doesn't surprise us now. And, you know, when I was like, we were talking about Silence of the Lambs, I was like, that movie doesn't have to have those three, like, really amazing kind of, like, unprecedented gimmicks where they fake you out about who the victim is, where the location is, whether they caught the guy, or, like, this... CSI.
It's exactly
Law
CSI,
and Order. Yeah. Like, there's no procedural surprises during this. And CSI, I mean, I think this was popping around the time.
Yeah.
That opening, the drug raid scene, is just straight up CSI. It is so sunny, bright,
But then they filter it to make it blue. It's very high contrast.
And then, like when you just think about the atmosphere of Silence of the Lambs, and you're like, can we at least have like weather?
Yeah.
In this shootout scene, like it was just like I was like, they tried like to in the back it. Lot of like the Radford.
Yeah, and they they make Hannibal so smart in this and so quick to escape and so much smarter than everybody. And that works in the first movie because Clarice using honesty and frankness and like directness and wit and smarts is able to match him. They don't give Julianne Moore anything other than just like, I figured out this photo or whatever.
Yeah.
There's no like strength of character. And this is not her fault because it's just not there in the script. They don't give her anything that makes you think she's at his level. And therefore, he just does seem like this Superman floating above everybody.
Yes, yes. And to that point about like what Julianne Moore's experience like in her life, like in Silence of the Lambs, you know, the thing that we identified, it's like, oh, in every scene, if there's a guy there, he's watching her or she's having to deal with a different subset of what one would call like toxic masculinity. Yeah. Like they all have their different versions of that, that she deals with. And like you said, the last episode was like, it has specific tools to work with each of those. Like she can code switch. She knows how to talk to each person to get like with this. It was like,
well, every guy she comes up against in this one is just a stereotypical douchebag.
Oh, that's what I was going to say. Yeah. There's no nuance to the misogyny.
No.
Like when she first shows up at the shootout, not only is it confusing when the guy's outright misogynist to her because you're just like, in this movie, somebody should tap him on the shoulder and be like, fuck her, that's Clarice Starling. She did the...
Yeah.
She cut the... You know her. Like, why are you talking back to her? Like, right. Or something like that.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, that it is so garden variety misogynist. I was thinking about it when I was watching. I was like, it really lets the male viewer off the hook. Because when you're watching Silence of the Lambs and you're watching that nuanced toxic masculinity, you're like, I do that.
Yeah.
I've felt that before. I've you're seen so me do right. that. And then when you see Hannibal and it's just like, listen, bitch, you got to let the boys of the SWAT team follow this. I'm like, well, I've never said that before.
And you've got Ray Liotta's character, who I think his performance is really funny in this, but that character is just so bad. But when he laughs...
When he looks, the first, like, if we're talking about Silence of the Lambs, how, like, ooh, there's kind of, like, this really cool way of how you see how they look at her, but you never enter their point of view of looking at her. The way Ray Liotta is introduced is, you see he's looking at her thigh under the table. You see a point of view,
yeah. But when his skull cap is sliced and he's drugged and he's just talking like a kid...
Oh, before
I don't think it's the movie's gone. It's bonkers. It's killed itself by then. So I'm just latching on to what is in its own right a hilarious and wonderful performance. Even though if it's probably not right for the movie and the movie ain't right.
Oh right.
And, oh and God.
The what's not right too is how he has that fucking fitted cap, Limp Bizkit. Fred,
Fred Durst.
Yeah, he's got a low, Fred Durst cap. Like before they pull it off as a way to cover him, like he could have been. What's that choice?
He should have been wearing his little biking cap.
Yes,
because they already showed that.
Yes,
I guess that would be seeping through with blood, but still.
I mean, I guess they suggested he was a sporto, so maybe that's why he had that fitted cap. Oh God!
But even when they take that off, and there's the like CG. Part where he's moving around, he's obviously, as we've seen by the pictures Brantley sent us, he's got a green screen skull cap on, but it's just such bad CG even now.
Yeah, and Brantley subtly in his notes like like wrote what Ridley Scott said like verbatim about the effect where he's like, it is completely and effortlessly seamless. You know, it's like, I like when somebody gets so hooked into the technology.
Yeah, of a movie
that they get
of.
Seduced by it.
Yeah.
And then they can't take two steps back and be like, oh, this looks like shit.
Yeah. That's big for him because his movies always seem to be kind of rushed too because he's making so many. So,
yeah. Again, to the point though, like those earlier ones though, those are like, take 2 years, 3 years of marinating. But yeah, to mention the Ray Liotta skull thing, what's weird, I mean, when I first saw it, I've only seen this movie one other time. I was at a dorm room. My friends and I rented it to celebrate 9/11. I don't know why, but I was in college when it came out. And I don't know why we watched it, but it wasn't for that. The skull, I remember when I was seeing it, I was like, it looks too small at the top. It doesn't look like he...
No, you're that, right. Yeah. Which is ironic. You think it would be too bulky.
Yeah. What's going on? How could one fix that now? What's going on? Like, I don't know what the uncanny valley of one's brain and a skull is to go like, well, it should look like this. It's just, it looks too low.
I don't know. Maybe part of it is that you see him now and his head's been shaved. So Hannibal's shaved his head. He's also shaved his own head. As the only attempt of a disguise, which I don't think goes far enough.
I love the little like Tom Wolfe type look though. That's very cool.
Yeah, his Truman Capote Italian dashing
Capote's
cap.
Capote's the better one. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But Hannibal, if they would have left Ray Liotta's hair longer, maybe that would have made more sense.
Yes, yeah. Or maybe, and having it not as like clean.
Yeah.
Like it's just too... perfectly, give me a little bit of ridge.
Oh, here's the perfect example of what's wrong with this movie. There's a point when Anthony Hopkins attacks that nurse on the camera and they do these like black and white or whatever flashbacks. The sound mixer has mixed in animal roars when he's biting her.
Yeah, that whole surveillance
and
thing
is so
funny.
And that's when you've really lost what Demme and Foster and Hopkins created and gone to just like pure... Let us telegraph what horror is instead of let these people show you.
Yeah,
and that was like when I was, even on that perfect day of watching a movie like this, kind of went, oh, fuck you. Come on.
Yeah, because I think that's maybe the first kind of scare, too, with Hannibal. So when it's this kind of cheap, I mean, it has like the classic jump scare music sting when it happens, like, I think I would have been startled regardless of the little music thing.
Yeah.
And then it does the... thing that might seem nitpicky, but for the people who notice it, it bothers them. And even if you don't notice it, in the back of your brain, it bothers you. Like when they're watching the surveillance camera and it goes to three different cameras edited together, and one of them is like from the floor. It's just like, so... nobody's caring enough really to execute this scare in a way where, like, Ridley Scott, Tony Scott have been accused of, like, they kind of, like, will do the thing of, like, setting up 8 cameras and they shoot a bunch of shit and then they go to the editing room and then that's why their movies are kind of these, can be great, but, like, a little chaotic.
Yeah.
Like, when I watched, I was like... even the asylum staff's surveillance cameras set up multi-cameras so they could later edit them together.
The Matrix bullet cam.
Yes, yeah.
And then the other thing about the melodrama of like the animal roars, then they go the other way with Barney and he's like, I'm going to save a wounded bird to tell you that this is a good person.
Yeah, the total lack of dimension to...
Yeah.
Because... the thing I thought you were going to say, too, with Lecter, where you're like, when he was, when he would bring up the one time about her being, like, white trash or something, it's a complete, like, misunderstanding of Hannibal and, like, their relationship. I know he says something to that effect in Silence of the Lambs, but it's at the moment when... he's trying to get her to like be honest with herself. He's like trying to open her up like a psychiatrist would, and he's doing it in a kind of a demented way. With this, he goes like, you white trash. I was just like, he's doing it because he's trying to bully her to come hatch a scheme with him. It was like, oh, this is where you're, like what you're saying, it becomes like comic booky or something. Like, the fact that he's now doing stuff to... exact revenge and pull in fake. I mean, I do think it's cool if you watch these as like a trilogy. There's some cool thing of the like, who's the first one? We said his name last time. We couldn't. Dollar Hyde.
Oh yeah,
Dollar Hyde is the like freaky guy who the movie isn't really about, but it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then Buffalo Bill is that, and Silence of the Lambs. It's a cool choice to make Gary Oldman, who's kind of like not deadbeat criminal. He's kind of an out in the open, and his like prestige allows him to be like openly criminal, but he's the freaky guy who you're like, I mean, maybe he's like a pedophile too.
Well, how did he become?
You're just like, he's worse than Lecter, so I don't care what. Yeah, yeah.
How did he become a quadriplegic? Because I know why his face got messed up. Did they say?
Oh yeah, it wasn't like he. They hung, right? And he said he hung him up, and did that thing to his face with the mirror. So maybe hanging somebody up makes them. But then it's not like the other victims had to be in a wheelchair.
I don't
know. Right. Also, is this the first time, like in that flashback when you see it with Gary Oldman? Also, it's really cool that Gary Oldman wanted to be uncredited.
Yeah.
Just to heap the most I can on the Gary Oldman stuff, because it's really
although
great.
Although it did sound like there was a slight element of your own ass about that, because he got in an argument with De Laurentiis, who announced it, but I don't know.
Well, it's like the F. Murray Abraham is uncredited in Bonfire of the Vanities because by that point in his career, he would get name above the title. But because of the star wattage of that movie, they weren't going to put Tom Hanks, Melanie Griffith, Bruce Willis, F. Murray Abraham above it. So like he was just like, then I will take note. I think it was the same thing with Hannibal. And then
I
they're
think
like,
that's what I read, but I don't know. It wasn't in Brantley's notes, I don't think. So yeah, I don't trust it.
Yeah, I don't trust it. But it was like,
why was he a quadriplegic?
Oh, Gary Oldman's on billing. They were like, you just can't admit, like, just, it was one of the producers like saying, like, try to imagine that title, it's, those are such big stars. Clarice and Hannibal are coming back. Anthony Hopkins and Julianne Moore. You just can't imagine Gary Oldman. I'm like, I fucking can.
Yeah.
I can imagine that title would be badass. If you walked to the theater and the poster was Anthony Hopkins, Julianne Moore, and Gary Oldman, you're like, oh, Gary Oldman.
Don't forget Leonardo.
Yeah, of course. Sorry. Him above all of those.
Yes, okay.
But you'd be like, oh, he's the baddie in this. That's fucking awesome.
You would, yeah. Do you think after he ostensibly couldn't get his name in there, that his whole thing about like hiding his name till the end credits was based off of Kevin Spacey's thing in Seven?
Wow, maybe, yeah. That was like a cool thing to do.
Where he saw that and was like,
Well, there is another Seven rip, like that title sequence.
Yeah.
Which...
pretty weak.
It's a funny, and Red Dragon, I remember, is even more.
Yeah.
Because
Red Dragon comes out the next year.
Yeah, and has a full-on Seven opening credits ripoff. But this one is also 70, Chloe 70. but it like it has a Seven style. But it's a full like circle come around because, you know, David Fincher made his like name with Alien 3, but also his commercials of like taking the Ridley Scott look and making it his own into something else. But now you got Ridley Scott coming back around and taking David Fincher's
That's
stuff.
That's crazy. And yeah. When you think about he inherited and, you know, at least commercially failed with Aliens in a certain sense, critically and commercially, been revisited since. But to have Fincher rise to the cream of the crop with Seven and have Ridley kind of like borrowing from that,
it's like
it's a little
watching if your friend broke up with his girlfriend and then his dad started dating that girl. You're like, dad, just let your son have his girlfriends. You don't have to be the young man anymore.
No. Last episode we talked about how watertight also the procedural element of it was and believable. This just gets crazy too with the like three nose tribunal of scent smelling specialists that are somehow gathered in the same part. And just like
the tribunal of nose smellers, yes, yes.
Who are you going to get? Get me the nostril six. You know, there's no one else that could possibly handle this.
I love those people. Yeah, they're like, burger.
I smell lavender, but really what I smell is murder.
Obviously, I know who wrote this because they were cooking burgers and they're good. Like this comic, Michelle Balloon, B-I-L-O-O-N, I want to give credit where credit's due. She had a really funny joke about how tap dancing is one of those things where if somebody does it, I can't tell the difference between somebody being great and somebody pretending.
Oh, yeah.
But that's the same thing. Same. With, yeah.
That's hilarious. I only have one other note, and it's an interesting one, I think, because I don't think it's successful, but I wonder if it was... I don't hate it. I liked it, but I wondered if it was intentional for them to say one thing that was so amazing about the ending of Silence of the Lambs was that editing twist between locations.
Yes.
And they basically do that with the hand chop where you think he's cutting off. I liked that element. It was pretty cool. That's a good... It's a little like cute, but the fact that Hannibal, especially if you're thinking back to the original Hannibal and Clarice, would cut off his arm rather than hers.
Yeah. Yes. No,
pretty interesting.
I like that too. And it seems like the people making this movie identifying like, oh, these movies are fun if there's an element of surprise sometimes being it behind the curve.
Yeah.
So I did like that. Yeah. Opening the movie with the Frankie Faison voice is a little like cheap to make you think the whole cast is back.
I know.
It would be a little bit like if there was a Happy Days reunion and only Ralph Mouth came back.
Yeah.
And so it opens with a voiceover of Ralph Mouth being like, the whole gang was back together. And you're like, yes! And then
it's just Fonzie, because clearly Fonzie is the Lecter category, allegory.
You're right.
But no Richie.
No Tom Bosley.
Do you miss Chilton at all? I mean, they were best to just let it be, but
what happened with Chilton?
Well, we want to know, right? Like, that could have been the cold open of this movie, is the getting Chilton thing. Or that's probably best left to mystery, like Silence of the Lambs wanted it, but still.
That's what I meant when I was saying they should have just gone, like, this is a sequel to Silence of the Lambs. What are we going to do? Let's forget about the book. Because, if it was just, like, the opening's Chilton... Now we know maybe where Hannibal might be. Clarice, you got to go find him because you're the only one who can.
Yeah.
She gets on a plane. I mean, I'm a pack, so I'm coming up with the lamest.
No, but already I'm more interested.
But then she goes to
just get
find
Giovanni
him.
Giannini in
and
there.
Then because they have this thing, this connection, he always has a way to seduce her or she seduces him. Once it's time to pay the piper to arrest him, she can't.
Yeah.
You know, and then now they're embroiled or they... Now have to figure out a way how they're going to disentangle, or he has to disentangle from her because now she's going to bust him because she goes by the book and that's what he loves about her. So he's not going to put in her a position where she has to go against her code. I mean, there's just all these like when they don't meet each other until 106 minutes, and then it's so funny, it's laughable that their dialogue scene is when they're driving in two separate cars, and it's like. That's hard enough to have a conversation like that in life when the person's like, and then my uncle got really angry and threw the ashtray. Oh, you got to turn left here. Yeah. Like, that's like what they were dealing with. It was like, oh, make sure to not speed through that yellow light because I'm behind you. So just slow down so we can keep talking.
Did you listen or watch through the end of the credits?
No.
It ends after the credits ends it. You hear Hannibal go, "Ta Clarice H." And it's so obvious that when she reads that letter that says that, I don't think they use voiceover for him, but they probably recorded it and didn't use it. So then they're like at the end, just like, oh, let's tack that on there.
Yeah. And they did the little trickery by when she's listening to the tape. putting Julianne Moore in a little dialogue thing. He was like, that's a little cheap. He's like, I want to taste your vagina or something like so. And then it clicks back in to the actual Silence of the Lambs.
You can hear the quality of mic change too.
Quality of mic change and the quality of his timbre.
Yeah.
Like you can see like just the difference in like, this one's hammy.
Yeah.
This one's less hammy.
Yeah.
Because it's that part when he is like, I'd like a window that looks over the, you know.
Yeah. Which did you see the first shot of Italy? Is that?
That's cool.
Yeah.
I didn't notice that. I did say with the Silence of the Lambs thing, when he's like, I want a window that looks through the, I was thinking, if it was a musical, that would be a really kind of beautiful opening to look a little.
That's what the sequel should have been.
Part of your world sort of thing.
I want a window.
When she goes and talks to the FBI guys and they're sitting across the table from each other, did he, that panel that's saying yay, 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 nay, nay, nay to her, like, you gotta straighten up and fly right. I know you're not a Magnolia head like I am, but one of the guys who was like, Miss Sterling, you have to be more careful with a shootout. So he is the same actor who plays the doctor in Magnolia, who tells her character, like, you can give this morphine to Earl, but the Earl you know isn't really going to be there anymore. It's like beautifully acted and between two characters. And I can only imagine. I mean, Magnolia, I think, was the last thing she shot before she went on to Hannibal. So is it just a case of like, well, if you were an FBI guy, this, or Ridley Scott's be like, who's that guy? The doctor dude. He's pretty good.
We're taking you, Julianne Moore, and you get to bring one person with you from the last shoot. Go ahead and pick.
Tom Cruise. No. The doctor guy. I do like, I mean, it's pretty dumb, but the like, clarify that it's now, he eats the rude.
Yes. Yes.
Such a
he
funny
eats
little.
The rude.
Yeah. So like, I'd like to think when that guy, the Italian detective, I give him no honor. I just call him
Federico Pazzi.
He might as well be like Roberto Benigni, the way you're talking about him comes in. But when his cell phone goes off and rings, and then Hannibal looks over and notices it, I was like thinking like, I'd like to think he was never going to fuck with that.
until that moment.
He's like, you interrupted my presentation.
Or if this sequel series went on for five more films, it would be like he's at the opera and a woman sits in front of him with a large hat and he just goes,
Tiger style.
Yes.
And then on nights when he's really hungry, he's kind of sad. He's like roaming the streets and like watching a guy like pick his nose. And he's like, good enough. When he launches at him.
Or he'll be setting up things like that where he'll like call his cell phone in a restaurant to see if he'll answer it in public. And he doesn't. He's like, oh, God, I'm starving.
Speaking of other Hannibal schemes, he was Dr. Fell. I was hoping that they were like, Dr. Fell. He's like, yes, Dr. Norman Fell.
Like, and then he looked at camera, did his eyeballs.
Did a big eye roll. Very weird, the Osama bin Laden thing, huh, buddy? Can we just reflect on that? That's a pretty weird thing that they linger on to know. I mean, I know he was
notorious. He had done his terrorist attack on the ship, so I guess it makes sense. They probably just... I bet everybody else on there is fictional, but they're kind of, you know... People. He probably thought people did know who he was.
Well, I was wondering when that... Yeah, when I saw that, I was like, are those other... names that they focus on, were they as notorious?
I bet it was just his attempt to give this film some verisimilitude that it was severely lacking.
Yes. Well, I like the verisimilitude of Lecter getting the aisle seat at the opera. when the detective's looking at him and he looks over, I was like, and then Lecter just kept staring at him like, I know you were looking at me. And so the guy has to do the awkward look back.
I did like that moment.
I like that too. I was like,
that's your Giovanni Giannini, man. That's what you're going to get.
Is that a celebrity move? Like, do you think Anthony Hopkins has ever pulled that where somebody was like, stole a glance, and then he just keeps looking at him. Yeah. Like, yeah, I know you were looking at me at the opera. Yeah. Doink.
You doink.
When he shows that picture of the past relative who got hung before he dies, yeah, that's cold. Like, seeing a picture of, like,
yeah, no matter
your
how
uncle.
Many. Right.
Like, with his pants down at camp.
I think he was like his great, 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 great grandfather, but still.
Not that great, if you ask me. I didn't like what he was up to.
If he was so great, why did he let himself get thrown out a window and disemboweled?
Two more things. I love the when Verger. Oh, him wanting the mask is a little Kylo Ren wanting the Vader mask.
Yeah.
Like,
I know.
That's the ultimate collectible for me. I love his little voice. It's so
and
cool.
And his little...
Oh, gross.
Yeah. It's effective.
And it's a great American accent.
I know.
It's like, that alone would be applaudable.
You would never know that was Gary Oldman if they
except
had done
those
that.
Flashbacks.
Yes,
yeah,
right.
Right. If they hadn't... And wouldn't that have been amazing
yeah.
if you had gone to that on opening night? His name's not in the credits. Those flashbacks aren't there. It's like, what the? Because he's not in any commercials or any
no.
trailers. I doubt it. I doubt, like, between commercials for orange juice and, like,
what's that?
Hey, I'm going to show this guy.
Right before ham.
Boiled ham commercial. Ew, Oscar Mayer.
Do you think this was Ridley Scott going with Guy Pearce and Prometheus going, hey man, my thing is I take pretty cool, good looking, younger, great actors and then cover them in makeup and you can't tell.
That's true. That
and
is
it's
a
like
return to
one
the...
of the stupidest things about Prometheus is that, and then they don't use him as a young man.
The,
why
yeah,
didn't he hire an older man?
Oof. I mean, Ridley Scott has soiled some beds. I mean, I was reflecting on it, going down my aliens hole, Matt. The fundamental misunderstanding of all these post-alien resurrection movies. You need Ripley. What are we doing here, guys?
I know, and
this
it's so weird.
This is bananas that it's not even, like, possibly reflected upon. Like,
is Prometheus one of the most divisive films? Because there's so many people that really love it. I know we talked about this.
Yeah, because we're anti-that theus. Some
That's
people
right.
are Prometheus.
Yeah.
And we're saying no anti-eutheus.
Antithetheus.
It is the antitheus. I like little Lecter's shopping spree when he went out and bought some silver.
Yeah.
Just him having a little fun yeah. moment was like. Yeah. A true, maybe probably, well, this leads us into Best Kill. For me, the fucking stand up and cheer moment. The only part of the movie that I like.
Yeah.
Completely loved was when Hannibal was like, you could push him in and just say that I did it. And the guy was like, okay.
The
and then you
Doug
just get...
Stamper from House of Cards guy.
Oh.
It's not really him, but he seems
and
so
And then
much
you get the fucking gross,
yeah.
gross pig eating that guy. But that it was all set up. I mean, it has the stand up and cheer moment of the Bond villain
yeah.
with the henchman
yeah.
turning on the Bond villain. Where
right.
you're like, the henchman knows!
Vader and the Emperor, yeah.
Or the Wicked Witch. You,
yes.
The, you killed her thing. I mean, he did come across very Bond villain. I mean, when
yeah.
he's in that bed and he's like, has some disfigurement, but has like a bank of TVs and he's very rich and has things at his disposal. I was like, Thomas
Harris.
Are
you listening, Barbara Broccoli? Give us Gary Oldman as a villain. Late stage Gary Oldman is there's nothing better for me, and because his younger stuff we've talked about, it's a little like mm-hmm. indulgent. Jackson Lamb, Gordon. I think he's amazing.
All the Gordon stuff post Gordon has been that was a real pivot.
Yeah, and it's also ironically how he's been doing some real shit too. Like he seems to just do anything, but Tinker Taylor, man, oh boy.
But you were digging show that he was doing
Slow Horses.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, he just has also done a lot of strange kind of B intrigue movies that I don't know. And then he's in some amazing things. It's like he really is a modern day Michael Caine or Gene Hackman or something, where he does a lot and not everything's good, but he's always pretty good.
No, I mean, there's only, I know when in the 70s, if you were a young man who loved acting and actors, to have Robert De Niro's new movie was like an event, because he only did maybe one a year, one every 2 years, and you knew that. It's like what Daniel Day-Lewis is now. You're like, oh, it's an event. I'm going to see this guy, like what he put into this for 5 years or whatever it took, and I'm going to get the gifts of that. Just was making me reflect. There was a time where Gary Oldman, I think, had that power of people being like, the professional is worth going to because Gary, or Bram Stoker's Dracula has now this extra boost of like prestige because this guy who doesn't do everything is doing it. I'm trying to think outside of Daniel Day-Lewis, who's retired. DiCaprio, is there anybody whose like movies are still like
not
entered that Gary Oldman stage of like, oh, he's in these straight to whatever rental movies that or VOD. And you go, okay, I guess Gary Oldman's doing that. Like, what actor still? It's nice that you put him on the Gene Hackman, Michael Caine, like, because that is what it is. It's just somebody who's workman and people love, and why not?
Hackman, not workman.
Although Gary Oldman, he played an old man.
Michael Caineman?
Oh, that reminded me, man. I always forget. And then we can. What's your best kill?
I think it's that one. Yeah, as well.
It's pretty good, huh? What is this?
Oh, I meant to ask you about this.
Hannibal, 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 Hannibal. You can join in.
Hannibal,
Hannibal, Hannibal, Hannibal. You're always on the run now. Running after the Italian detective. You gotta get him somehow. I think you've got to slow down before you start to blow it. I think you're headed for a breakdown, so be careful not to show it. You really don't remember. Was it something that he said? You opened up Ray Liotta's head, singing Hannibal. Okay. I really only changed that line about Ray Liotta's head, but... what? Are you kidding me?
I don't know. I just got this idea right now.
Please, please, please.
All the things that I know... Hold on.
Yeah, baby! Come on!
Here we go. Wait. Let's get Hannibal, Hannibal. I wanna get Hannibal. Let's get into Hannibal. Let me hear your body feed. Your body feed. Let me see your body feed.
Let me see your body feed. Let me see those piggies eat. Oh, those pigs.
Oh, yeah. Russian boars imported from Canada.
I hope those pigs come back in Red Dragon. They come back in little bow ties and they're like distinguished.
Red boar. They're eating red boar deli meats.
But if they got like the Terminator 2 treatment with the Terminator coming back as the good guy, but in Red Dragon, the pigs come back to, like the good guys.
To fight a dragon.
Yeah, they like save the day by fighting the dragon. Yeah. Now... thoughts, expectations with Red Dragon. I'm excited to see Ralph Fiennes.
Me too. I think I thought I was going to like Hannibal more than I did. And sorry if we're negative, but if you've seen the movie, you're right there with us. I think I thought I would enjoy it for what it is more. It was too long. I think if it was shorter, I would have liked it more. But Red Dragon, I still remember really enjoying it as kind of being perfect pulp. Mm-hmm.
Red Dragon. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. No. So, no. I remember
this
being
one doesn't disappoint me
in entertainment.
Yeah.
And when I first saw Hannibal, I was like, mm-mm. But when I saw Red Dragon, I was like, hey, pretty good.
It's got a lot going for it because it doesn't require Jodie Foster.
Yes.
Clarice Starling.
And those actors are all really, I mean.
Yeah, Ralph Fiennes, Emily Watson.
Philip Seymour Hoffman.
That's right. Oh, yeah. I always forget.
Like lots of great, great actors. So that it's got that going for it.
Yeah.
Should we rate it?
Rate this baby?
Yeah.
13 or 12.5? Let's see. We gave Manhunter. Hey. I gave it an 11.5. You gave it a 10.5. We each gave Silence a 13. I'm going to go 5.
Yeah, I'll give it a 5.
There it is. Pretty united so far this season.
Yeah. Yeah. Like the airlines, which if we were, using that, if we were endorsing airlines, that would be a perfect segue.
Yeah.
But
We're not. American Airlines, over to you.
There was somebody who on the Patreon, I'll bring it in next week. Really, I think in the Manhunter comments, articulated very well. They read Thomas Harris's stuff and sort of the like tensions in his work that and basically it was like the combination of gothic plus FBI procedure science is like the things that make it interesting, but also later kind of get strange.
Okay. I'll look into that.
Yeah. Well, hey, I'll print it out.
Okay.
And I'll bring it in a folder and I'll hand out
make
copies
to the gang. Make
sure
to print out the map quest of how to get here as well.
Yeah. My map quests in my backseat got replaced by water bottles and then got replaced by face masks over the years here in Los Angeles.
Oh, I thought you were going to say like Hannibal masks.
Oh, no, no, no. I don't want that. Who do you think is the movie collector? Who's the guy, the guy who's like, get me the real prop? Like, he's the ultimate, like, movie prop guy.
Yeah.
That weirdo.
I know.
Vesper? Is that his name? Vespi?
No. Verger. Mason Verger.
Nice that I gave him a name right the last 30 seconds of the episode. But Matt, a pleasure as always.
As always. We'll be back in 2 weeks with Red Dragon.
I can find Red Dragon Tattoo. I'm fit to be dyed and I'm fit to have you.
What's that?
Hey, we'll find out.
Bye, cliffhanger.
For more Gorley and Rust content, head over to patreon.com/withgorleyandrust to get episodes ad-free and a whole week early. Plus, monthly mailbag episodes and feature-length watch-along film commentaries of your favorite horror classics. That's patreon.com/withgorleyandrust. Email us at withgorleyandrust@gmail.com, and your questions might be featured on a future mailbag episode. With Gorley and Rust theme song by me, Matt Gorley, and performed by Townland. You can find us on Instagram as Townland Band, as well as Paul's fantastic band at Don't Stop or We'll Die. And why not rate and review With Gorley and Rust on Apple Podcasts? It'll help us grow the show and keep us trucking through the Jasons and the Michaels, the Leatherfaces and the Chuckies, the Aliens and the Candymans.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.